Welcome, welcome, my friends, to the Beggars and Brawlers podcast. This is episode 71, recorded Monday, the 4th of December, 2023. The book is secretly out today. I'm not going to tell anyone until tomorrow. But I do have another preview chapter for you today. Plus, what to do at the end of a series with characters that are all worn out. Alright, so this will be Chapter 3 of Queen of Blood and Blasphemy, and like usual, it comes with a spoiler warning, and that warning essentially says you are not going to understand this if you didn't listen to the first two chapters, and more so if you didn't read the first three books. So, if that's you, stop listening. If it's not, here's Chapter 3 of Queen of Blood and Blasphemy.
Three. We need to attack, the Kifte says, slamming a fist into his palm. Hit them in Saray before they know we're coming. Kill them all and take the monocle for ourselves.
We don't even know if they have the monocle, big guy, Anand says, leaning against the stern rail and watching Jateau dwindle in the distance. The sea is still unnaturally calm despite the wind snapping our sails, but we are least out of the worst of the floating wreckage.
Does it matter?
The Kifte asks, pacing around the circle where the rest of us sit.
They have tried to kill us how many times, and each time we stay quiet. What if they don't have the monocle, and by killing them we only liberate Gaxna and Alethea's temple and the city of Saray? That is still a legendary feat.
Estrigia clears her throat, saffron skirts arranged neatly around her on the polished ironwood deck. We still need the one who has Gaxana if we don't find a monocle on our own, and I still have hopes Miara can be swayed to bring the whole guildhouse to our cause. Small chance of that happening if we assassinate her.
I want Nerime's gone as much as the rest of you, Begdol says from the far side of the circle, his back stiff in still the waters. More, probably. But if this flood isn't his doing, we don't have the time to waste on it. We need to focus on finding a monocle, not picking our enemies off.
He glances at me as he says it, and I feel the same pressure I felt from Estrigia when she said all their visions of surviving the flood pointed to me. A tightening strap across my chest that says if we can't just kill someone to stop the floods, then it's on me to learn to control a monocle once we find one. It's the pressure that drives me back to Nerime's impossible bond every day. And every time I fail, it gets tighter.
That is the problem, Isong says, his hand warm in mine. We've known we are out of time for a while. Alethea saw it in her visions, then Estrigia in hers, even Akifde in the cloud slugs of the forest. But this, today, what we saw in Jateau.
He glances away, and I get a flash of the worry and fear he stuffed under his castle of logic.
This is real. This is the floods happening now.
If the choice is to sail to my homeland in the hopes Miara can lead us to a monocle, or stop first in Saray and make sure our enemies haven't found one, and we don't have any clear idea which is better, we need to take the faster one. At least then we can leave Saray knowing we're not abandoning the monocle.
I shift next to him.
I agree. But before we make that call, does anyone have any thoughts on Jateau? If what we heard and saw seems more divine or man-made? The sails snap above us, and the breeze tugs at my robes.
What they described was strange, Estrigia says at last, but without knowing more about how the monocle works or how the actual floods happened in the past, I don't know that I can tell.
I nod, and see others do the same.
Lacking that, then, I say, Isong's right. Saray is closer, and seems as likely as the Dale to get us a monocle.
I just pray to Ujjay and Jaya it's not the wrong choice and costs us our monocle.
Estrigia twitches at her skirts.
It is, except for the matter of Miara's vision.
You believe her about it?
I do. She has no reason to lie to us about it, and all her actions so far say the same. As for the visions themselves, the bloods never lie. It's how I knew I had to seek you out and why I never lost faith in Cerante, even when it seemed certain we were going to die.
The strap around my chest tightens a little more. The bloods never lie, like the waters never do.
And so we must be drowned, for I was not strong enough to see through its reflections, and neither will be this world.
I stretch my neck to either side. If only I had something to do with this pressure, other than worry and wear myself ragged trying to break through Nerime's blind.
I know part of me wants to go to Saray just because it would get me back on land and in action, instead of having to suffer through more of my own circling thoughts.
Isong clears his throat. The chronicles are never clear on whether there is just one monocle or many. Miara could be right, and there could be one in Saray. We've even considered that we might be able to make more if we had the knowledge.
If your people had the knowledge, right? Anon asks, fishing in his pocket for a clove. Nobody else on this continent is smart enough to do it.
Maybe that's what Miara saw. Is somebody about to make one up there?
I shake my head. She said it was already there, that it was the reason she was trying to get Gaxna to lead me up there. But still, the nearest Dale port is what, 3 weeks away?
Something like that, Isong says. Saray is less than a day. I think we have to do it, even if Miara says there's nothing there. I'm still not sure I trust her anyway.
And what? Begdil asks, body still as a stone in meditation. The seven of us attack the temple and guildhouse, hoping to kill their leaders, or force them to divulge the location of their most prized artifact? It is a fool's errand. I vote for the Dale. The way is longer, but Miara at least knows where the monocle is there, and they will not be expecting us.
They shouldn't be expecting us in Saray either, Estrija says. Now that the other sisters are gone, Miara should be the only one tracking our location, and she claims not to have spoken to Nerimes or Yeolat since their divide.
Claims, Begdil grunts. I doubt her word is of much worth.
For once, I agree with the man.
Estrija shrugs. We can check her true loyalties if we go. I can meet with her, use the water sight Alethea has taught me to read her thoughts. She'll never expect it coming from me.
I stare at her. And put yourself in the middle of the Saraean guildhouse?
Estrija takes a steaming cup of tea from one of the bloodborne sailors without looking, scent of green tea sharp on the breeze.
Believe it or not, I do think most of the sisters there are still trustworthy, and I will know the ones who are not. Many of them stayed more out of distaste for splitting the guild than any loyalty to Miara.
No, Anon says, the smirk dropping from his face. You're not going in there, not alone.
And what, Anon? You're going to come and protect me from a guild full of witches? She pats him on the leg. Don't forget I'm one of them. I'll be fine.
He grimaces, but doesn't say anything else. I may never get used to them being together.
That would be good, I say, if you feel safe doing it, Estrija. If we do end up going to the Dale, we need to know if we can trust Miara.
Safe enough, she says, sipping at her tea, especially considering the alternative. And besides, if Miara has the monocle and this allegiance has just been a careful trap to get you, Alethea, that should be apparent too.
It's a theory we've talked about more than once since leaving Sarante, that Miara's whole story could be a lie to lure me in, because her visions say I'm the only one who can use the monocle, and she already has it. That she'll use Gaxna as leverage to make me do whatever she wants with the monocle. Or that she doesn't have it yet, that the monocle really is in the Dale, that will be her plan once we have it.
And if she isn't a real ally, I say quietly, heart stuck on Gaxna even with Isong at my side, and she doesn't have the monocle, then you can kill her.
Teiwo's eyes widen, and even Anon looks a little surprised.
That's cold, he says.
She's had Gaxna prisoner for what, 2 months now, at least? I ask. She'll never let go, not as long as she needs me. Can never let go, really, unless she dies. If we don't need her, then as far as I'm concerned, she's more than warranted death, even without Gaxna, for murdering Regiana and selling the guildhouse out to Nerimes to start with. I know I sound cold, but my heart is cold on this one. Cold with a rage that started out lava hot and stayed in my heart until it hardened into something much heavier, but no less angry. The second we don't need her anymore, I want her dead, by my own hands if I can manage it.
My fingers twitch. That would be an excellent way to release the pressure I feel.
Isong clears his throat.
Good. Estrija is a natural choice for checking Miara and the guildhouse. That leaves Yeolat and Nerimes.
The chosen has to be my task, I think, Begdil says. We shared a house once, though he was elevated a year before me. He might believe that I come in repentance, or at least under a flag of parley.
And if he doesn't, Anon drawls, all you gotta do is keep him busy enough for me to steal the monocle.
Estrija sets her teacup down with a clink.
What? Anon says to her. You think Begdil's gonna be able to do it? And Nerimes is the one that's probably gonna have it, right? He's the top of whatever little club they've got in Saray. He already cut Miara off, and he's just using Yeolat for whatever money the Dale are giving him. So if somebody has the monocle, it's him. And if he does, he grins, I'll find it. I can be your porter or something, he says to Begdil. We'll figure it out. Begdil scowls at the idea, but it's a good one. I definitely couldn't make it in, and we don't have the strength to attack the temple directly. And Anand's right. Even if Begdil gets Narimes to talk, he's never getting the monocle out of him. Unless Begdil kills my old enemy. I make a note to mention it to him. It's not something he'd want to talk about in front of everyone. Good, I say. We're all committed to checking Saray first, then? One after another, my friends nod. We heard news of a giant Dale ship in the harbor, Isong says. One of Yelat's arcs, I'm sure. I will get on board and search it, and if she isn't in the temple, I will make sure Yelat doesn't have it on her person, either. Something gleams in his eyes. We have old business, anyway. Ekifte gives his particular laugh. Ha! A blood debt! I wish you well, brother! There is a darkness in his eyes I've never seen from Isong. I eye him. Will you be able to leave her alive if that's what we need instead? Of course, he says, and the angry flush in his bond disappears as quickly as if he were an Ujian monk using the icing technique. But it's like you said with Miara. The woman deserves to die for crimes she committed 10 years ago, if nothing else. If we don't need her, the world would be better off with her dead. I nod. Then I wish you good hunting. I wish I could be there with you. I roll my neck, pressure still tight around my chest. That covers Miara and Narimes and Yeolat. We're looking for monocles first, and if they don't have them, then we want them dead. While you're doing that, I'll use the immersion to search Drowned Saray. That's where Yemla saw the monocle in his vision all those years ago. No, Isong says, just ahead of everyone else. You're too recognizable, he says. It's been years since anyone in the Dale saw me, and Astrija and Begdil have plausible reasons for coming back. You, if anyone sees you at all, word will travel back to Narimes, and every overseer in the city will come after you. No, we can't risk it. I take a breath and exhale through my teeth. He's right, but... I will go, Tewo says. The monocle is something my people have searched for years, and Old Saray is one of the places we have never dared to go. It would be an honor. I force myself to unclench my jaw. They're right. They're right, but if I had my way, I'd go to all these places. To suss out Miara, to confront Narimes, to break into the Dale ship. Anything, just to feel like I'm doing something. So what then? Am I supposed to just stay on the ship and wait for you all to come back? You'll be with all of us, Astrija says, voice soothing. You have our blood now, and the full vision of blood and water sight. You can follow us as closely through the bond as if you were there, without risking being caught. Monitor all of us, and pass information back and forth, without getting caught in wherever you are and what you're doing. You're the only one who can do that. Besides, she says, face softening, I know how to command Miara's attention. She won't be able to hold Gaxna while I'm there. I know she's just saying it to soften the blow, to get me to let go of my itch to do something, but it works. If I can be with Gaxna, the real Gaxna, even just for a few minutes, I take a shuddering breath and let it out. That would be almost as good. I know it's not right that she should mean that much to me, but maybe that's what love is, or just what I am. Okay, I say, how do we do this?
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. That's, to me, that's the end of the inciting incident. That's where we've kind of set up what we're going to do this book, and now comes the part where we do it and everything goes wrong. So speaking of everything going wrong, in writing a series, the question I wanted to talk about this time around is, what do you do with worn-out characters? Some of these people have been around with us since book one. Alethea, mainly, she's been our point-of-view character and been on almost every page of the book. Of all three books. So she's gone through a lot and learned a lot, etc. And I don't know if you've had this experience, but sometimes I'm watching a TV show, especially the ones that go really long, like the classic TV shows that have like 25 episodes per season. And as a writer, I don't know how you do that. And sometimes I'm amazed that people do it, but you end up putting people through so many ringers and so many difficult things, and they've gone through like so many rock bottoms and learn so many deep and powerful things that it starts to lose impact and I start to kind of not believe it. The show that comes to mind when I say this is The 100, which is to me, it's kind of trashy TV, but I also really enjoyed it. And I had a time when I was watching it when more closer to when it had come out. And that's a show that really puts people through a ringer and makes them make hard choices. They never get to make a good choice or one that they're proud of. It's always one that's going to leave them conflicted. But it has a lot of seasons. And as we get into the later seasons, they're just so scarred and damaged. And I guess that's one way for a worn out character to get worn out, is to be so scarred and damaged that they can't really do anything anymore. I recall the beginning of the third Hunger Games book feeling like that too, even though in that case, I didn't feel like it was earned because she hadn't gone through that much, relatively speaking, to main characters in other novels. And I think the other way that a character at the end of a long series can get worn out is by having the opposite, like the positive version of that experience, where they've just learned so much and grown so much that they're basically Jesus or whatever, and they don't have any problems anymore. Because to stay true to the things that they've learned before, you can't have them repeat those mistakes. That's super annoying in a series. I've had that happen. Gosh, what is an example of that, where they learn something and then the next movie or episode or book in the series, they're doing it again. Like a common one is like, how can I be a leader? I'm so bad at being a leader or whatever. And they get through it and they realize, you know, they want me to lead or whatever, so I guess I can do it. And then next book, they're back to how can I be a leader? And it's like, if you didn't learn this the first time, why should I care about you trying to learn it the second time? Because I don't trust you that this is going to stick. And it feels a little bit more like the old TV series that were like emotional resets at the end of every chapter. They begin each episode in the same basic state that they were in season one, episode one, like The Simpsons. They don't learn anything. They don't remember what happened previously. It's just a blank slate and they do some stuff and then you repeat the clock. It's like some of these shows are on like an endless Groundhog's Day loop. Or they have an external plot that moves forward, but internally the characters are stuck repeating relationships and lessons and whatever. And I really am bothered by reading series like that or watching series like that. And so it's not my intention to do that. But the other problem is, if you have a character go through so much and they become so scarred and damaged, they can't really be proactive anymore. And they're not fun to be with because they haven't learned from anything. So they get really negative. And I haven't written any characters like that. Talking this through makes me kind of want to. But I have certainly written the other ones where they come out of all these difficult experiences having learned something and having grown. And I think that's an awesome and rewarding story to read. But at a certain point, they've learned as much as they're realistically going to learn. And you can't repeat those lessons and they just become better and better people. So there's a thing that we talk about in fantasy, power creep. And power creep is basically the concept that you can start off with small powers, but as they get more powerful and defeat this boss, then the next boss has to be more powerful, or the next conflict or whatever, and their powers have to grow to defeat them. And you very quickly scale up to it's a world-threatening conflict and they have like world-saving powers. And then the book after that, what do? Because they have world-saving powers now. And so, you know, there are solutions to it, but the basic problem remains that to keep upping the stakes in a series, you have to also up the capability of the characters. And at a certain point, it doesn't become believable anymore. This kind of happened to me with the Cradle series, which is a progression fantasy. So it is literally all about the characters getting stronger. And I've come to really love that kind of story, and I'm going to try to write one in my next series. But I'm going to be very cautious about this power creep. And I think the same thing can happen with, let's call it, character creep, where the character becomes so good or becomes so damaged that they can't really function as a regular character anymore. The problem with a character that's learned so much is that characters who aren't conflicted inside aren't that interesting to read. Like, they don't make good main characters. You can have a Gandalf, and even Gandalf was concerned about like the darkness growing in the east or whatever. But for the most part, he was a super capable, like super learned, super wise guy who would show up and give them help. But if you wrote the story from Gandalf's point of view, it'd be kind of boring because you'd be like, well, I can use this of many mysterious spells. The magic wouldn't be mysterious anymore because he understands it, even though we never get a chance to. He's not conflicted inside. And so we don't have a thing to attach to him about or to hope with him about or watch him try to learn stuff. He's already gone through all the learning and all the growing in his life. And now he's, you know, except for Well, I'm going to give you some spoilers here, but in step four, turning from gray to white, and who knows what he actually learns or how he actually grows there. He just comes back as the white because Tolkien keeps the magic mysterious. But he wouldn't be an interesting character to follow because we don't know. I don't think that he has internal conflicts or many lessons left to learn. Maybe he does because he changes from gray to white, but that's sort of something we see only from the outside, I think, because it would be very difficult to write from the inside. Meanwhile, if you're writing a first-person point of view series like I am, which is already challenging in its own ways because when you're writing third-person, you can bounce around between people's heads and storylines and it keeps things fresh. And if someone's getting a little too learned or a little too damaged, you switch to someone else. In a series like Tidecaller, I don't get to switch because we're never in anyone's head except for Alethea's, except for the weird thing that I do in this book and that I think I would keep doing where she can use her magic to inhabit other people's heads. But I still don't think that in terms of fiction that would work for us to not have her be the main character. I mean, I'll see what you think after you read this book, because I go pretty deep into that point of view and I'm going to talk about that elsewhere, I think in a later one of these podcasts. But locked into her head and having her already learned all the things, like she made peace with her father in book one, and she, what did she go through in book two? I don't remember. In book three, she went through the leader thing, and her answer was not, I've become a good leader, but I'm not a leader, I'm not doing this. And I think that's a good option to remember, is that they don't always have to learn how to be good at a thing. They can say, this is not my thing. And in this book, there was actually a moment around chapter 10 where I found her talking about how she didn't feel like she was worthy to lead, or she was feeling conflicted about putting her friends in peril. And I'm like, oh no. We have done that before, and the most annoying thing in the world is to have a character forget the lesson they worked so hard for in the last book and then relearn it. So I had to just kind of leave it as is. What I've discovered is that for me to write a character authentically, I can't decide beforehand what lesson they're going to learn. I need to write the story and have them ramble about whatever they're going to ramble about in their private moments. And then I'll notice a pattern in those ramblings, and that pattern will be the thing that they're actually learning. But I can't plan it, and I can't even really notice it until I have a draft. And then I go back and draw up that conflict and see how deep it gets, which I certainly did with this one. You can probably already feel the beginning tendrils of it in the first few chapters, and I don't think it's much of a spoiler to say that it has to do with worthiness and her relationship to Jay, which is something that's been pretty rock solid, but she has a real crisis of faith in this one. Which is not something that I planned. It's something that came up in the course of writing it. And then it was my work afterwards to draw it out. So thankfully, she did have a natural thing that she still had left to learn. And maybe there'll come a point when she doesn't. And then what do you do with a character like that? Obviously, you can kill them off. In this book, that's not much of an option because then I wouldn't have a point of view character. And I think it'd be a little jarring to suddenly be in someone else's head. You can also sideline them if you have the luxury of not writing in first person, but I can't really sideline her either. I do about as much of it as I possibly could in this book. And some of the early readers told me this story didn't really get going for me until she got going. So you'll see what that means when you read it. And most people were happy with it, but I don't think that you can sideline a first person point of view narrator much further than this. And this is not nearly to the point where she could not learn something internally or be conflicted by it. So what do you do with a worn out character? I think one answer is to hurt them in new ways. You know, she's already hurt in many ways and she goes through a lot of struggles, but a struggle is different than being hurt or wounded. And I didn't think about this when I was thinking through this podcast, but just in talking in the beginning about the tortured ones and the wise ones who are old characters, maybe the real solution to this is to continue balancing them between that, have them get wise and then have them be tortured about something. And the torture will maybe lead them to new wisdom or, you know, lead them to abandon their ways in ways that are interesting, as long as they're not repeating themselves. That's something that I need to toy with. I've been far too positive and far too lenient on my character so far. But one answer is to hurt them in new ways. I do that to Alethea in this book towards the end. And I think it spawns new lessons for her to learn and new ways for her to interact with herself. And I do think it spawns new things for her to go through that feel authentic and real, but I won't know that until we write the next book. It worked for this one anyway, but it was more of a consequence than a inciting incident in this one. I think another thing to do, which is a thing that I do to Alethea in this book, without giving away spoilers, I give her something that she's been wanting since the beginning. And I think that, you know, sometimes when you get what you want, to misparaphrase a 70s song, it's not what you need. And I think that might be the case with her. So I think sometimes rather than withholding forever, like Fox and Mulder never kissing, or Mulder and Scully, let them kiss. Let them have a little bit of a relationship and then realize that that's not the thing. And then everything changes, but it changes in interesting ways and it keeps the character from feeling worn out. So that's also something that I do without giving away spoilers. But I think for me, the main solution here is just not to force it, is to write the book and see what they're struggling with. I'll already know that the book is boring when I'm in the middle of writing it if they're not struggling with anything. So I think something will come up. Maybe at some point it wouldn't. I think we're far from that point with Alethea, but we're already at the point where she could feel worn out if I let myself just repeat the things that we've done before. So my goal in this book and the following books, if they happen, because this book is a real close to the series so far, is to not let her be worn out. I think probably I need to torture her more, and maybe that torture will lead to more wisdom. And I will stay with just letting her authentically tell me instead of planning something out, because the planning makes a character feel flat, and I would rather have a boring character than a flat and unbelievable one. So ultimately, how good a job I do on that is up to you. The book, like I said, is secretly out today if you happen to be listening to this on the 4th of December, 2023. I let it come out a few days before the promotion start just because I want to make sure that it's there and available. But you can buy it now. I can say that with confidence. There's a link in the notes below. And see where the rest of this goes. I also have a couple more preview chapters coming for you. The next one, I'm going to talk about that weird point of view that I mentioned, which you got a taste of in chapter 2, and you'll get a much heavier taste of in chapter 4. It was a really interesting thing for me. And then in the last preview chapter, chapter 5, I'll talk about fulfilling promises made way back in book 1. And how to tie a series up. It's not something that I've ever had to do before, and I certainly learned a lot in doing it. So I hope it'll be interesting for you to listen to me ramble about that. But for now, I think I've gone on long enough. So hope you enjoyed the preview chapter. Thanks for listening to the end. You're the best. And I'll be back with more in a couple days.
For more information on Levi Jacobs and his books, including the award-winning Tide Collar Chronicle, visit www.levijacobs.com, or for a free audiobook only available to podcast listeners, go to www.levijacobs.com/free. Thanks for listening, and read on.